Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to speak with us about, drumroll please, the opening of the 2016 Bridgewalk season. Welcome, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen. It's amazing that it's already that time, isn't it?
Can you believe it? Truly.
No, I can't. But I guess it is what is. So
it is what is.
We don't have much choice.
And it's a tiny bit early because it's not just ordinary Bridgewalk season, is it?
No, it isn't. It is the 15th annual, a very special occasion.
Yeah, really, really special. So we thought it would be fun to have you. So it literally kicks off. I think if the site's not live now, it's shortly going to be. I don't know if all the pieces got into place under the wire.
It did, but the site is live.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yes.
And so we thought it would be fun to have
more. And we'll be revealing more as the weeks go by. But the campaign page is live.
Oh, it's so fun. So fun. You know, and just a pause there. As always, you know, we say that. And the campaign page is live. Magic. Press, magic wand. But so many folks who put in an amazing amount of hours. And what was striking me today as I was seeing the emails go back and forth was the attention to detail is really inspiring, and the ability of people's ability to pay attention and to stay with just all the different parts and to care about each little piece of it. I find that very inspiring.
Yes, it is how we practice, right, Jen? It's such an application. There isn't a separation from our practice and how we bring practice to everything we do. And that level of wholehearted attention is how we embody it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So up comes the Bridgewalk, and in this case, the 15th annual, and it's an opportunity to practice in that with that setting.
Yes.
And so that said, we thought it would be fun for you to tell us a little bit about what's in store for this Bridgewalk season, what our themes are, what we can look forward to.
Well, Bridgewalk season campaign title, drum roll, is the Teacup Challenge. Playing off our year-long focus of Anjali emptying your teacup. So one of the things we realized is that there are so many things that people are doing from a practice perspective that it's really, really helpful for all of us if we just piggybacked on all the practices that we're doing in order to make sure that we can all do what we want to do and not be overwhelmed by choice. So it's the Teacup Challenge, and it happens to be the 5th year that we're doing, the 15 years of doing the work of Living Compassion. And so when we looked at 15, it's the Ruby anniversary. Mm-hmm. So we looked at what the Ruby stands for, and it is an impressive list of very, very stellar qualities, but the most important being the red color of the Ruby, which is this unquenchable flame of unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And it surprisingly has a long list of attributes like keeping the body safe and banishing sad thoughts, and bringing about clarity of purpose and awareness and so on. And there's this long list of qualities, which when we looked at it, it's all of the things that we get when we actually practice awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so perfect, such a perfect, beautiful match. And then to have it drop in that it fits so perfectly with our year-long theme as well. How handy.
Exactly. So Ruby anniversary, 50 years, quality is awareness practice. And since the Bridgewalk is a celebration, how about we celebrate awareness practice as the challenge that we're going to focus on over the course of time, and bringing it together with Anjali emptying your teacup, we call it the Teacup Challenge. And we are in a year-long retreat process where every week we get sent out an assignment from the Big Bamboozle. And so we figured, wow, every time somebody catches out a bamboozle or becomes aware that they are bamboozled, it's a concrete celebration of awareness. And so this year, the teacup challenge is emptying your teacup, and it's themed around the big bamboozle assignment. So we bring everything together, this bridge walk campaign. So every instance of catching the con artist out as you do assignment, as you do the assignment every week, is a moment of conscious, compassionate awareness. And for the 15 weeks of the bridge walk campaign, we're going collectively, the Sangha collectively is going for 15,000 instances of conscious, compassionate awareness, which is equal to emptying your teacup.
Outrageously fabulous. I have a huge smile on my face. 15,000 instances of catching out conditioning attempting to create suffering.
That's right.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Here's how it works, right? So it's the teacup challenge. It kicks off next week. Every week, the Sangha will receive a newsletter with the particular assignment of the bamboozle that we're practicing. Mm-hmm. And for the duration of the bridge walk, everyone gets a teacup. It's really important. You can get your favorite one that you already have. You can buy one for the occasion, or you can make one if you choose. And that's the teacup that you will use to track your various instances of catching the con artist out. And so perhaps you put a value on each thwarted bamboozle or bamboozle caught, so say 10 cents for every time you do get bamboozled and you become aware of it, and every time you catch the bamboozled before you get bamboozled, and you drop it into your teacup. And at the end of the bridge walk campaign, you're going to empty your teacup and make your offering by writing a check to Living Compassion, and that's your fundraising campaign around it.
It's seamless. That's amazing.
It's seamless.
Yes, in one campaign.
With all in one campaign. That's right. So we empty our teacup, which is our practice focus for the year, and that is catching the bamboozle in action. We attach a monetary value to it if we choose, if we want to fundraise around that. And then we make our offering, which is Anjali, at the end of it by supporting the project that we deeply care about.
And on October 15th, which is so fun, is the actual walk when we lots and lots of folks will join us in person. It's the culmination of the celebration for everyone
yes.
who participated in any way.
Yes, and it's a strong encouragement, and Sherry's been talking about that. If you've not been to the bridge walk, make it a commitment to show up this year. And it's the 15th year, and it will be the year that we're really, really making a special effort to show up and participate in person. So hopefully people are already doing that. And just to say one other word about the campaign, so the description of the campaign is up on the site right now, and if you type in, I think, www.livingcompassion.org/the teacup challenge, you'll go to the webpage that describes the practice principle around Anjali, emptying the teacup, the big bamboozle, the campaign, and the target for what we're trying to fundraise for in Africa. Mm-hmm. And then next week, the first newsletter goes out that gives you the assignment and some information on how to participate in the campaign and how to report and track your instances of conscious, compassionate awareness. And we even had the cool fundraising idea that if you want to invite friends and family to support the project, maybe they'll match your donations for the number of instances of conscious, compassionate awareness that you are aware of.
Yeah.
And so there's some ideas of how to do that as well.
We have a slightly more ambitious fundraising goal this year because a couple of reasons. One is, you probably remember, we're now providing nutrition for the 1,000 children 7 days a week. So every single day they're coming to the facility to eat, and which is extraordinary. I was just, in fact, you know, each month we send off the money that we're going to for the folks for the next month. And so the gals at the bank now know the routine. Right? They, oh, you're sending your wires, and they were asking me all about it today, and just could not believe that the image of these women cooking over charcoal stoves for 1,000 children every day.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
fascinated by that mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. daring commitment. And then also that there's been quite a bit of inflation in Zambia, and
mm-hmm.
so we're really mm-hmm. working to keep the cooperative members at a place where they can still sustain families. So, yeah, really, really
yep.
important places we're expanding well, to.
And it seems like every challenge we put out there in terms of generosity, life meets with its abundance, and we're all
yes.
the nodes that make that possible. I mean,
yes.
15 years ago, raising $108,000, which is what we did last year, would have seemed almost impossible.
Crazy.
And yet,
it's crazy.
When we put,
yeah.
Yeah. And when we put the challenge out, life, you know, in its generosity, basically rises to it. And so,
it's so true.
We're ready for it, right?
Yeah.
We're totally ready for it.
Yeah. You know, it's such a good point, Ashwini, because I know for me, as we were putting that number together, without even really, you know, thinking about it, or I hadn't even started to really look at my own personal fundraising, which I always do during the Bridge Walk season, but just these things started to drop in of ways to expand my own place, you know, my own efforts in that, because of it is exactly like you say, almost like it's an invitation, because the project is expanding, the invitation for me in my personal, you know, fundraising endeavors just naturally expands. So that's neat. Thank you for bringing that.
And it also feeds into the theme of the practice challenge, right? Which is, we are a practice that pays attention and expands
yes.
awareness.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what I just saw
and
with that.
And empties the teacup.
And empties the teacup, exactly. Because to come at it with an attitude of mind of, oh my gosh, well, now what are we going to do? I mean, there's inflation, and now I need to figure out how we're going to, right? That's where the teacup gets filled up, and then life doesn't
yes.
have the opportunity to communicate with us. But when we empty it out and just say, here's what life is calling for, which is exactly how this project started to begin with, right? Sherry said yes,
mm-hmm.
right? Life, the teacup was empty. Life offered something to go in it, and Sherry said, sure. And that's
mm-hmm.
how it's been ever since. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so the project actually embodies what it is that the awareness practice is about, and the practice focus for the year is about, right? Listen to,
yeah.
pay attention,
yeah.
notice the conversation, drop the conversation, and then
yeah.
see what life is offering in the moment. And that
yeah.
process application, that practice process is just true for anything, whether it is
yeah.
fundraising or catching the bamboozle or deciding
yeah.
to go on
yeah.
retreat or whatever it is. It's just so universally
yeah.
applicable. And so it seems so
yeah.
apt to practice that as the focus for the next 15 weeks
yeah.
and use it as a way to make an offering in a very
yeah.
tangible and concrete way that impacts
yeah.
many, many people's lives.
Yeah, that's such a great point. But I just, as you said that, it's like we get to employ the benefits of our own practice, of all the great practice we've done over time. We get to employ that in assisting a group of people that we just love dearly. So it's such a win-win.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well,
and
we
I guess we're running out of
time. To Michael and Sherry. Exactly. But
yes.
thank you so much, Ashwini, for all you do in putting it all together, and for very articulately speaking to it this afternoon and to kicking off the season.
Thanks, Jen, and just stay tuned, everyone, because there will be good news updates on this on the campaign and an invitation for Sangha to participate in the good news, as well as a lot of information coming out throughout the next
yeah.
15 weeks. So,
yep, just the beginning. Much more to come.
Just the beginning.
Yep.
Much more to
okay.
come.
Okay, thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, bye bye. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. I bet you are just kind of jumping out of your chair. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm wondering about how big a teacup I can find to hold
all this abundance. Me too. I love it that Ashwini said, or make one. Right? Because I thought, well, I mean, I love big teacups, God knows. But how are you going to find one that lasts for getting through all those bamboozles for 15 weeks? I got to make my own teacup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing a collection of teacups here actually overflowing.
Right. That's a good idea, too. Yeah, fill one up, move to the next one.
Yes.
Yeah. So fun.
Brilliant
so
idea.
Fun.
It was
Say
a
what?
Brilliant idea, I thought. Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant
idea.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah.
And just one after another from this practice, brilliant idea after brilliant idea.
I know. These people, do they stay up all night? And well, they just, I guess from what they just said, they just let life drop in the next piece of brilliance, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like the more open we are, the more forthcoming life is, or the more, could we say, prolific, or however that works, that it does seem to go on and on and on. More good stuff and more good stuff.
Yes, it seems like our job is just to keep the channel open and let it flow through.
Yeah. And when we get a message, do something, do X, then we do X. Right? It's easy in that way. We always talk about, you know, you don't have to figure anything out. Just be open, and life will tell you what the next move is, and there it is. We don't have to, there's no strain involved. Just say yes when life speaks.
You mean all that thinking is overrated?
It really is, isn't it? Yeah, at least mine is. I'll tell you that. I was never very good at it, and it never seemed to produce anything terribly remarkable. So, yeah, we can let that go.
Wow, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I loved it when Jen said that about the gals in the bank, and just that image of cooking over charcoal, an open charcoal fire for 1,000 children every day.
Yes.
Does that put it in perspective or what?
And as far as I can tell, joyfully, without complaining, with a lot of love.
Yeah. Singing, dancing, carrying on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Role models for us. You know, we whine that, I won't tell you what my whining is, but, you know, the kinds of things that we complain about that we have to do every day. I have to drive over there and pick up that takeout food, or, you know, I have to stop by the market and buy these groceries, and, wow, okay. But I don't have to go home, light my charcoal fire outside, and start cooking for my 1,000 children. That I don't have to do. So,
yes, that's
true. I want to help them do it, though. I'm really happy they're doing it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's our role in the endeavor, seems like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We support them. Yeah. To do this beautiful thing. Yeah,
and then we're supported in turn by their effort and inspiration and willingness. It's great.
Yeah, and when, as the point was made, when we do our awareness practice and we have the benefit of that, and one of the benefits of that is supporting this amazing group of people doing this extraordinary thing on the other side of the world, yowza.
Yeah.
You know, thank you is just not big enough.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I have some announcements here, unless you'd like to start us in a different
direction. No, I want to hear those announcements.
Okay. If you are not a part of the year-long retreat but would like to participate a la carte in the upcoming practice intensive, there are still a few spots available. This intensive, which runs from July 11th through the 22nd, will focus on a specific aspect of the practice theme for the year, Anjali, emptying your teacup, and includes a daily recording and listening assignment. And Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful support for conscious compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up weekly to practice being present. A new quarter begins July 15th, and the deadline to register is this Friday, July 1st. And
so many ways to empty our teacup. Oh, go ahead. There's more.
Yes, many ways to empty our teacup. And the final way to empty your teacup is to do the courageous and compassionate work of going beyond self-hate by joining the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat October 1st through 8th at the beautiful Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California.
Yes.
This foundational retreat is perfect for beginners and experienced practitioners alike.
It is really, should has such a bad reputation, but truly anybody who does awareness practice really should do that retreat because it's the whole deal. And foundational, yes. It's what we need to understand. So when we say awareness practice or spiritual practice doesn't begin until the beatings stop, that retreat really makes it clear, that makes that clear, and shows us clearly how to stop those beatings. So hopefully everybody
yes.
will avail themselves.
Yes, and it's great to have such an extended period of time in the privileged environment to really get that in the foundation.
Yes. Yeah, it's truly extraordinary. It's like nothing else in the world, I would say.
Yep, I agree. And for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And a reminder that we are on Bamboozle number 6, Comparison, with the assignment for week 3. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, please press star 6 and then 1 to make a show. And a focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes would be great. Okay, Sherry, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rita.
Hey, Rita.
Hi. I'm really surprised I got on. It seems like every time there's a computer crash, I'm the first one up.
Oh, well, good.
I guess
good.
So.
What's going on?
Well, what's going on is... I started Zen Awareness Coaching, and we were talking about recording and listening, and I said that I record, but I don't listen back. And he said, to listen back. So I did, and I was at home, and I was having this kind of gripping feeling in my solar plexus, and after I listened...
A what feeling, Rita?
Gripping.
Okay, got it.
Gripping in my solar plexus. And after I listened to my recording of wonderful things to say to myself, it went away and never came back the whole day.
So there could be something to this, huh?
The magic happened, like you have said. You know, if people would just do it, they would see how it works.
Yes. Yeah. And... as I also always say, you can see why the voices
of egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, are so invested in people not doing it.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and because the misery, there you've got gripping in the solar plexus. Okay, so that means anxiety and there's something wrong and there's just a million stories that go with it, right? And so just a ton of suffering, a lifetime of suffering. And then you learn this simple little technique that makes all of that go away. So the folks who are invested in suffering, those negative voices in the head, they're not excited about that because they are no longer the dominant force in your life.
Well, they're kind of back today. I've tried.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely they'll come back. Absolutely. Yeah. I like to compare them to drug dealers. You know, you say, no, thank you. It's not like they're going to, or telemarketers. You know, if you say, I'm not interested, it's not like they're never going to call again.
Right. And I've tried listening back today, trying to get some upbeat recordings going today, and it's not having the same effect. But what I'm trying to do is just allow myself to have sort of a kind of a nothing day, you know, where I don't really feel lit up about anything. So I'm not sure if I should just kind of let it come and go, let it pass.
Well, there's no reason to. There's actually no reason to. And so there's a ton of support in the world for the idea that these feelings that we have are legit and we should feel them. And if if a person had a bad childhood, if a person didn't have a bad childhood, they are a truly remarkable individual. But if you had a bad childhood, you need to tell those stories and feel those feelings for, you know, most of your lifetime. Now, my contention is that is completely and absolutely unnecessary. First of all, the person telling the story is not the person who had the experience. So it really is a matter of giving a lot of energy and attention to suffering that is completely unnecessary. So once we get that, so you can do the two-handed recording. If somebody is upset about something, you let them rant and rave and carry on, and then you offer them what would be helpful for them. And if they are legit, it's just somebody who's really upset about something and needs to be listened to and heard, then they're going to be happy. If it's the one talking, just wants to keep talking, just wants to keep telling those same stories that make you unhappy and miserable, then you say, okay, thank you, that's enough, and you turn your attention to what is actually so. And that's why we make lots of those what is actually so recordings when we are present, so that when that system is trying to take our life away from us, we can turn our attention to those recordings that came from what is so, and those recordings, listening to those recordings, will bring us back to what is so.
So give me an example of what is so.
Oh, okay. I can give you an example right now from my very own life. So I'm in California, as I think you are, and so it's late afternoon, and it's I'm looking out through the windows. It's blue skies, big, huge green trees. A light breeze is blowing. I'm looking at flowers, all different colors of flowers, like that. And that is what is so. I'm sitting here. There's nothing going on other than me being surrounded by beauty. Mm-hmm. Now, if I decided I didn't want to attend to what's actually so, then I could get lost in a story in conditioned mind about something awful in the past or something awful in the future, but that's not real. That's just a story. It's not actually happening.
Yeah, I get that. Okay. And you, on your, you have mentioned several times the Imago therapy. So mm-hmm. I looked that up, and they seem to think that that you know we're looking for another person to fulfill our needs, and to work with that person because you can't fulfill each other's needs, but to work with that person to understand their needs so you can offer them a space.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. So okay. here's my version of Imago therapy, okay? So I meet someone, mm-hmm. and we immediately are right for one another,
mm-hmm.
okay? Just we like each other, we're compatible, we have fun, we're attracted to one another. It's just great, okay? Everything is just great, okay? And this person is what's called my Imago match.
Right.
Okay, so I just am crazy about this person, and then ego comes in. And ego is going to attempt to replicate everything that happened to me in my life that made me miserable. Okay, so I get my feelings hurt, and I'm super sensitive, and I get upset when I'm not appreciated, and I don't like it when somebody, okay, all these things. Well, guess what? This wonderful human being does all of those things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, because this person is perfect for me, my perfect Imago match. Now, mm-hmm. what I'm trained to do as soon as that starts is say, oh, I've made a terrible mistake, you're the wrong person, and leave the relationship. But
right.
if we commit to being in the relationship and working through those issues, and they offer a pretty extensive and really interesting process for doing that, then we can work through the issues and get back to the place of being wonderful together.
So is there anything in different from Zen? Because doesn't Zen just say, you know, clear the mind and go to what you do want to feel, joy and love and compassion, and not get into the story of the past?
That's right. But Zen is not therapy.
Okay.
And so with something like Imago therapy, when people want to do a process like that, and I often recommend it to couples to support one another in their awareness practice, and so what happens in that situation, so my perfect person has just not noticed that I spent the day fixing this incredible meal for us to share together.
Mm-hmm.
It comes home grouchy and isn't even hungry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I get my feelings really hurt, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a process of communicating about that. And what we get a chance to see is what I'm bringing to this is not what the other person is doing. That's
right.
What we get to see in the relationship.
Right. So I that's good. Thank you. And I'm thinking about, and I would like your feedback on this. I'm thinking about sending one of Harvell Hendrick's books to someone I was in a relationship with recently, because I think we had the classic experience. And I would send it to him just for information. But there's no contact. I don't know if that's, you know, beating a dead horse or offering a little point of enlightenment.
Well, you know, here now you're back to Zen. Right, we don't offer enlightenment to other people. We work out our own salvation diligently, and so for you to read the book and do the work would probably be very beneficial to you.
Mm-hmm.
Sending the book to somebody else, you know, I mean, we're free to do anything that we want to do.
Right.
Would I recommend it? No.
What about give books, your books to people? What would be the difference?
I don't give my books to people unless people express an interest in having one.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I'll go by that rule of thumb, unless they ask.
Yeah. Again, you know, we don't have rules. People
right.
can do anything they want. So we have precepts that we take, right? And
yeah.
people will want to use me as their priest and confess that they struggle with this or they still do that or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care what people are doing. Right? That's not working out our own salvation diligently. What we're practicing to do is pay attention to what we're doing, not to what other people are doing.
Okay. That's what I need to hear. Thank you, Sherry.
Yeah. You are so welcome. Take care.
You too.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rita. I found that conversation very helpful, Sherry. Very enlightening.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I like to hear that reminder that, you know, we're paying attention to what we're doing. We're not worrying about, can you imagine if the whole world just started, each one of us started paying attention to and taking responsibility for ourselves and not worrying about what anybody else is doing? Oh, my goodness gracious. Jesus would be so happy. You know, I had that conversation with somebody earlier who's very, very upset about what various people in the world are saying about various people in the world and how that, and I just offered that perspective that, you know, we don't have to go any farther than what Jesus taught. Don't judge. Don't be concerned about what other people are doing. Be concerned about what you're doing. Take the log out of your own eye before you worry about the mote in somebody else's eye. You know those kinds of messages? Those are really good messages for us.
Yeah? Yes. Timeless, too.
Timeless, yes. Oh, we could almost say more helpful today when we can know everything that everybody is doing around the world constantly, right? Oh. At least 2,000 years ago, you know, you had your village and you kind of had a sense of what was going on there, but not so much what was happening on the other side of the world. Yeah.
Sherry, we have another caller here.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Greta.
Hi, Greta. Hi. I didn't recognize your voice. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Excellent. Thank you. What's going on?
Well, I had an interesting experience yesterday. Kind of looking at the same issue that I've been looking at the last couple email classes. And understanding, seeing my karma, seeing things come up again and again in relationship, and getting kind of lost in a conversation about how to, you know, what can I do? How can I do something different? What didn't I do? Yeah, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a little bit of content, the other person was very stressed out and just really got taken over. And if I had to give you the short version, I just sort of, you know, at one point I just said, you know, I'm not going to accept that from you. I'm not going to take that level of confrontation or behavior, no. And that's a change in behavior for me, because usually I just try to let it roll over so I don't rock the boat, so eventually that person will calm down and their stress will go away.
Uh-huh. So was that a bit of a shock for both of you?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, I felt like the energy was really different. By instead of keeping it all in and hanging on to it, you know, I just said, you know, no, that's not acceptable. I don't want, I'm not, no, don't, you can't treat me like that. You can't say that kind of thing to me. And by doing that, just kind of getting it out, it just passed through me, and I wasn't angry anymore, but I was, you know, I just told the other person I was disappointed that it came to that. And later on, yeah, and later on, and I just said, you know, they apologized, and I just said, I'm not done with this yet, you know, I just need to see what's going on. And later on, it was just kind of like they said, well, you know, are you going to talk to me again? What's going on? And I just said, you know, as long as you indulge in that kind of thinking, that's the experience you're going to have. And that's the experience we're going to have in a relationship. And it was interesting because they acknowledged that they got taken over, and I, you know, I went back and forth with that unconditional love, unconditional love, unconditional love. And I remember you said at one point, it might take a few minutes for me to get there. I said, it might take a few hours for me to get there. But, you know, in the way that I felt, I wanted to be unconditional. I didn't feel like it. But life kind of presented that whole situation. And I felt like in the end, by changing my behavior and really pointing to a process, it did change everything.
Yes, and it doesn't sound like there was anything that we would necessarily have to call unloving about that.
Right, right. Conditioning might say that I wasn't feeling really loving about it. But I knew I couldn't like attack the person. It wasn't a knee-jerk reaction in any way. It was a response. I felt like, I don't need to have that experience here.
Yes, and it kind of takes me back to Imago therapy, where now I don't know this, but from hearing what you're saying, it would be easy to guess that the other person was kind of surprised by your response.
I think so.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you, you know, I never knew that bothered you. I didn't know that was upsetting to you. And when we're the one, you know, the recipient of it, it's like, that seems impossible. How could you not know that would be upsetting for me? And yet, if we've always done that, if we've always been that way, and you've never said anything before,
right?
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, when you talk about long-term relationships and the dynamics therein, you know, if I just keep believing that if I let it pass over, then everything will eventually straighten out, that's just a long time coping behavior that I have. And at some point, you just have to say, no, I don't know. That's just acceptable.
Yeah.
And it really...
Go ahead.
Well, it's just, it changed the energy and it changed the game, and it just, it feels freeing for me to actually see that nothing bad happens to me if I say it.
Yes, and nothing bad happens to the other person.
Exactly.
In fact, it seems to me like there's great potential in that. So this is somebody who's really stressed and doesn't have really good ways to handle the stress. So maybe together we can work on how do we handle that stress.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that did come up for me, just wondering what would be different, what would be more kind, because the other person does it to themselves a lot. It's a catch-22 for them. They get stressed when they do this thing, but they're the only one that can do it.
Yeah. And so what kind of alternatives do we have? And exactly. If you're starting to get stressful, maybe we could dance.
Well, we were driving, so we have to start singing.
Uh-huh.
Again.
Yeah. Well, but still, you know, what do we do? So we're
exactly.
driving, and the stress is building. What do we do? Well, we stop and, I don't know, throw a baseball around or get a Frisbee and find a park and throw a Frisbee around or whatever it is.
Wait, how do you to energy?
Yeah, to dissipate that energy that's just building up in the body, and conditioning, of course, is feeding it. And how do we take that energy and turn it into something that we can enjoy instead of use against ourselves and feel bad about?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because it's the same thing that's going on for me while the other person's stress is building up, so is mine, but I'm just like really
yeah.
trying to hold on to it, and they're just verbalizing it. And so it really, thing like you're suggesting could be really helpful for both people to really acknowledge what's happening and then
yes.
address it by dealing with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just had this picture of I don't know what kind of sense of humor that your friend has there, but singing what's going on.
Right.
Kind of like
uh-huh.
opera. You know?
Right. So it was an interesting practice opportunity, and you know, when we get kind of caught up in these belief systems, we think that unconditional love or the way to be looks a certain way, and yet in the moment, something like just, you know, it's kind of like a little Zen slap, you know, it's like, whoa, wake up, wake up,
yeah.
and
yeah.
it felt like that.
Present.
Yep. So
if we stay in that place of there's nothing wrong,
yeah,
then we're free to explore and experiment and question.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what I keep getting to. I don't know how to say what's going on because I know if I talk about this or that or the other thing, it just leaves. You know, creates a situation of feeling bad, and I'm not trying to make the person feel bad. I just want them to see, you know, or to get here or whatever it is, but I'm not trying to accuse them. I'm not trying to put them in their place or anything like that.
Right.
On the other,
how do we do
on
this
the other,
differently?
Exactly. That's it. That's all we're trying to do is, this isn't working.
Isn't working. What are our choices?
Right.
And again, if it's relationship, can we do this together?
Right.
Because
right.
one person trying to do it is not a relationship.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just it's a little bit of an unexpected situation and then an opening, as you said, that I didn't think was there. So it was a very interesting
mm-hmm.
opportunity.
Yeah, a whole new relationship.
Now, maybe.
Yeah, well, you know, what it makes me think of, Greta, so people will, you know, when we're in the grip of conditioning, people will kill themselves rather than change something.
Right.
And so with
yeah.
this, people will leave a relationship rather than risk simply saying what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Conditioning has to push that for sure.
Yeah. You have to do it this way. You can't think until finally we just get so sick of what conditioning is doing to us.
Right.
Which we believe is what the other person is doing to us. That we decide to leave. And sometimes, of course, the other person is completely flummoxed by that. What happened? Yep. And then when we look back, it's true. Well, I actually never was honest with you about what was going on with me. Well, gosh, seems only fair to the other person to at least give them a shot at kind of doing the right thing.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep practicing with that and see what happens next.
See what happens. It's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I was glad to get on tonight and just kind of explore it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad too. I think there's nobody on the planet who's paying attention who can't relate to this subject. Right? Somewhere
right.
in our lives, that's what conditioning is doing to us.
Right. With everything.
Mm-hmm. With everything. Yeah, precisely. All right.
Well,
thank you, Greta.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And, Sherry, it's time to hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be right back.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Sure.
The practice theme for this year is Anjali, emptying your teacup. As the Zen story teaches, when we're full of ego's preferences, opinions, likes and dislikes, there is no room for the guidance and clarity of awareness. Through weekly coaching, regular commitments, and the practice of recording and listening, we train to empty our teacup and be open to life. Zen awareness coaches are trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching about life issues and awareness practice in general. We hear from new folks and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the support they need to deepen their practice. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees, getting a coach assists in supporting practice. To request a Zen awareness coach, go to livingcompassion.org, click on the pink lotus, then programs to find Zen awareness coaches. Make 2016 the year of emptying your teacup and having the life your heart desires.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
Oh, very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hello?
Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Hi, Michael. It's Anne.
Who is it?
It's Anne.
Anne? From New York.
Anne from New York, yes.
All right.
Both callers are just perfect, but what I've been looking at is I've been doing the virtual meditations, and one of the precepts is I will not be angry.
Not to be angry. Very different.
Okay.
Time.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then let's see.
Cleared that up, huh?
Okay. Then what wants to drop in is that the same as get angry?
No, it's not, is it?
No. So I guess, okay.
Have you ever met somebody
who
is just angry?
Yes.
Yeah, they're just angry. It's not like they get angry. They just are angry. They, and we could say they be angry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And our precept is not to be angry.
Not to be angry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because okay, yeah, okay. So yeah, I guess let's see. What's dropping in? But if we want to call an energy anger, you can feel the anger like go through you, like any feeling go through you, sort of. But don't hold on to it because then you be angry.
Uh-huh. And
right?
Anger is, yes, absolutely. And anger is such an interesting if we can call it that, emotion, because when we look at it, what we see is that it's not that it's what's called a secondary emotion. So it is always covering up something that came before. So fear or disappointment or sadness, and those are not experienced directly, and anger covers them up.
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when a person stays in anger, which usually, again, when we look at it, there's a story involved, because it's really hard to maintain any emotion without a pretty good story going on. So when a person lives in that story of done wrong or it's wrong or whatever it is, they keep that story going and they keep that anger going. And so they're just living in that secondary emotion rather than getting in touch with what's really going on with them. When we get in touch with what's really going on with us, then we have a chance to address it. But if it's kept hidden, then we never get a chance to heal it.
Yes, that's what I've been noticing lately, is when I get angry, it's covering up something. Like the other night, I discovered that it was covering up disappointment or shame.
Something, it's a preferable feeling to another one. Not that it is really, but in our conditioning, you know, because we all have going what we've got going. And if in your conditioning, anger is preferable to disappointment or shame, then anger, you'll go to anger rather than feeling those less desirable. Not that they are less desirable, but if in your conditioning that's the way it is, then that's what will happen. Yeah.
Okay, one quick other just guidance around that, sort of to go with what you were talking with the other caller about, is if you said, I need to do something different, and if I was feeling this energy called anger, I decided to jump up and down or sing or do the opera like you said, I thought was funny. Would that then still, would that provide the space then for the underlying feeling to have a voice?
Yes, oftentimes it can. So there are lots of things that we can do, right? You can do the two-handed recording, right? And let the person go on and see if they'll give a clue about what's going on. If it just stays in a story, then that's not going to be terribly helpful. But doing something like one of those other behaviors, like for me, it's something of a rage specialist in my youth, and some of the ways that I got in touch with it was through really strong physical activity. So if I would start running up a hill, then my mind would begin to kick out connections, because of course stories go with sensations, right? So the sensations that happened in my body, with the heart rate being elevated, breath, shortness of breath, and kind of struggling, it then stories would come up that went with those sensations, and I would get to see what was being held there underneath the level of conscious awareness. And so lots of physical things like that. I used to go to batting cages, you know, and just take that bat and smack those baseballs around. In the same way, that sort of energy would trigger the stories, and I would then get to see the story that I wasn't in touch with when I was just acting out whatever was going on in my daily life. I could be identified with the anger, but I couldn't see it. I couldn't be disidentified enough from it to see it as the process that it was. Is all that making sense?
Yes. Like the energy just built. It's just like I want to get it through my body, and then it turns up as blah. If I'm with somebody, it just turns out as mean. Or if I'm alone, it just turns the voices turn it to me. The energy goes somewhere, but perhaps if
but
I
it's not
just
it's not
jump
legit,
or jump
right?
up and
it's,
down or
to see and you know it. For me, what goes with that is, and it'll sound like an intellectual process when I say it or an analytical process, but it's not. So the question, the kind of colon question that's being held in your mind is, what?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What is it? Kind of if you were with a small child who couldn't really articulate what was going on, or an animal, and you're trying to tune into what is it? What is it that's going on here? And that kind of being with and being present to will often open a portal to that information coming out because it's safe. You have become a safe place for vulnerable experiences to be received.
Hmm. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, that's nice.
So sometimes just the attitude of mind that says, I really want to know. I'm open to getting in touch with it. We've moved out of there's something wrong. I know there's nothing wrong. Right? We know there's nothing wrong. So we're not doing that. So what is it?
No.
Who's suffering here? What needs to be healed? What needs to be embraced? I want to know what that is. So that I can participate in embracing whatever that is. Now you're a safe place, right? Now you're a compassionate, kind presence for whatever is there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm so happy that you are doing that virtual meditation and you're listening to those precepts. And look at that.
Yeah.
It's just really changing your practice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. It's great. I try to do it every opportunity there is one. So, yeah, it's great.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
That's good. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Take care of
thank
yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anne and Sherry. We are a couple minutes to the top of the hour here.
I bet we better say adios.
Buonanotte.
You know,
if we're in Italy.
Buonanotte. Yes, buonanotte. If we don't, you know, it'll be somebody totally fascinating, as these people have been.
Yes.
And we'll get all involved in a conversation. We'll go way over the time. You know how we are.
Yes, I do.
All right.
So thank you
so
much.
Thank you so much, Michael.
You're
talk
welcome.
You soon.
All right.
Good
thank
night.
You, Sherry. Good night.
Bye-bye.